everyone. Let us all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Oh, fake this out. Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Someday. Okay. All right. Okay, so could we have roll call? Roll call, please.
Good evening, commissioners. I'll take the roll call. Chair Hartwig?
Present.
Vice Chair Hurd?
Present.
Commissioner Castillo?
Present.
Commissioner Main?
Absent.
Commissioner Montgomery?
Present.
Commissioner Pitts?
Present.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have a motion for approval of last month's minutes?
On the minutes, structural question. Under, what is it, consent agenda, item two, even though it was pulled from the consent agenda and put into new business, it's still under the consent agenda. Is that the way it should be reported? It's just a structural question.
Yeah, what we do is under the consent agenda B, it says Commissioner May requested to pull item B2 from the consent agenda, and then you moved one and three. So one and two is not moved.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, we always include it this way. At least we have historically, even when they get pulled, and then we put them at the bottom.
Okay.
All right.
Excellent.
Okay.
I'll move this.
Okay. It's been moved.
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Abstentions? Opposed? Carried unanimously. Old or unfinished business, we have one item.
In a rare occurrence, we do have one item. I'm grateful to finally use old or unfinished business for a purpose other than just being in our bylaws. We talked some last month about the 1% COLA increases. There were some numbers, and I think maybe, Janet, you want to come forward, and I have some, but Janet's done the research and has the numbers that you were asking for about each area and each of the units and unrepresented and what the cost of the 1% is. And she has the whole burden cost as well as the medical that was approved last month.
Good evening, Commissioners. Janet Rice, Deputy Executive Director. I am here to answer any questions that you have about this item. I can go to just high level some of the numbers in terms of the cost.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, in our previous Board of Commissioners memo, we annualized the total wages cost of $24,466,641, or $42, if you want to round it. And the 1% increase represents $244,666. As the total amount that would be added to the $24 million total payroll.
As a result of the 1% increase.
As a result of the 1% increase, which would bring our annual total to $24,711 and $711,308 is what the total would be in terms of the annualized payroll. You also need to consider, of course, we pay our employer Social Security and Medicare taxes, which is for Social Security, it's about 6.2%, and Medicare is 1.45. On the total payroll, that would be approximately an increase of for Social Security tax of about $15,000, and for Medicare, about $3,500. Currently, on the total, you pay about $1.5 million. So it, even though the increase is only going to be $15,000 for this 1%, the total amount that we pay for Social Security and Medicare is about $1.5 added to the total.
And the amount for the 1% for unrepresented? Just the unrepresented?
So for the total, in terms of what the total wages increase would be, even though the 1% for wages is 244. If you add the Social Security and Medicare taxes, it comes to $263,383.40.
And to give you one of the breakdown is for the unrepresented, just the 1%, not with the additional add-ons. The 1% is about $110,000 for just the unreps.
The what was that again?
For just the unreps portion of the COLA increase of 1%, the salary is about $110,000.
So what do you mean by the unreps?
The unrepresented, people who are not members of bargaining units, which is what the item's about. This is
I thought that's what
increase.
This was about.
Yeah, it's only, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right.
So just the unreps is $110,000, and the other represented make up the rest. Mm-hmm. And do you want to also just outline quickly the medical?
So for the medical.
Although it was passed as part of the package.
Our total right now, based on our current payroll, is approximately $6 million, $6.1 million approximately. And so with the 1% increase, it would jump to about $6.3 million on the total medical. In terms of our amount that we pay on a monthly basis, the agency pays a total of $524,000 a month on medical, and our employees actually pay $16,000 of that $524,000. So the agency actually pays about $509,000 a month for medical.
Wow.
So if you look at the difference between where we are now total versus where we're going to be, it's an increase of $255,000 for medical expenses alone. So adding that to, it's a little less than the 263 total for the wages. So that is what the monthly medical will cost us. On the CalPERS pension, I'll just go ahead and give you this with some caveats to it, because it is basically not including any potential CalPERS increases, because CalPERS is in the midst right now of doing their actuarial, and the last time they did it was 2011. We did not have a bargaining unit contract at that time, so none of the increases that the board approved previously were included in that actuarial report. So they are now doing that. They're running a little bit behind because we had hoped to have those numbers in October, but CalPERS is behind, so we probably won't get them till later in November, possibly first or second week in December. But right now, our annual CalPERS expense for all employees is $5.4 million. And with this, assuming no increases that will occur, and based on the current rates, it would jump by about $55,000. So between the 263 in wages, the 255 in medical, and the $54,000 increase in pension, so a 1% increase equates to about $573,000.
Aggregate everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any other numbers you want to add? We'll have more detail, by the way, on the other bargaining numbers in closed session. But we're ready for any questions.
I just have a really quick one, just so I can connect the dollars to the number of employees that we have. Could you give me that breakdown?
This is based on the approved FTEs as of July 1st of 372.
And it doesn't include part-time?
No.
It starts at 28 hours. When does it go to full-time?
It's usually 30 hours.
30 hours,
or more.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a question.
Sure.
Of the 372 employees, aggregate, that's the number of total employees, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so of that number, how many are the unrepresented that the 1% covers? I'm just
142.
I see, okay. Okay, and, go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, I've got a having a problem dealing with the unrepresented. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
So unrepresented are those employees that are not represented by a bargaining unit. Uh-huh. They are comprised of middle managers. There are some, we have some eligibility technicians in leased housing. It is a senior professional staff.
Okay.
So
confidential.
And confidential, okay. As well as a managerial, senior manager.
Okay, my second question is, if we execute this 1%, where does that really put OHA in comparison to comparable enterprises in the Bay Area?
Well, with this population, they are, according to the last salary survey, undercompensated currently. And there should be some equity that is distributed throughout. They're just coming in under the salary survey. We have not offered any equity. We've given equity to 1021. We gave equity to 29 that were both under those classifications. These, we haven't done any equity for, mostly because of our financial situation, so I have not moved that forward. This package is a little over 2%, which is in line with what the cost of living increase is. The reason we're moving it forward now is we don't think there's going to be a speedy resolution for the union bargaining agreements at this point. And we don't feel like we should delay the increases for our non-represented employees waiting for the union bargaining to finish. So we want to bring it forward now. We can certainly, if there's anything that comes out of the bargaining that would work for them, we can do a reciprocal kind of thing for them. But to have them sit for 3 years without getting increases just is not a fair trade-off, since they don't have the ability to bargain. So that's why we brought the medical forward. We didn't want to have them to pay the extra $180 per month starting in January. And this is the COLA that is also part of that package.
So then this 1% is strictly cost of living. It's not related
to
equity.
Strictly cost of living. And I would say it's, in to one extent, it is generous. I don't know a single housing authority in our area that is offering a COLA. Every other bargaining unit has agreed to lay flat, meaning they're not going to do anything for the next 18 to 24 months. We are the only housing authority in the region offering a COLA of any kind to any of our units, whether unrepresented or other. We're the only housing authority in the region that is offering any increase to the medical benefits, period. So if you're wondering what we're doing to our market, we're improving ourselves because our partners are not offering anything, either at the table or to their unrepresented employees.
So now do we know after this cost of living increase, I mean, how would we stack up with the other organizations equity?
Well, that we'll have to revisit the equity issue. Part of the thing, even our last equity assessment for that we do an equity survey, and we do a salary survey, which tells us how we are in terms of the median and how we're fluctuating. The last one we did had a lot of temporary takeaways that we did not count, the furlough days and things that are becoming either permanent or people are fighting to get rescinded, and we'll go back out. I don't know when, Flo, when will we go up? Where is Flo?
She stepped down.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure when we go back out to the next salary survey, but we do that periodically, and we do that not just for the bargaining, we do the entire agency when we go out.
Yeah, I see. So you'll do an agency-wide evaluation.
And this
all
should help
positions.
because if all our partners have laid flat and had no COLAs for the past couple of years and aren't increasing medical, or they have furlough days, which they have, then that will definitely mean our compensation for the unreps is probably more in line than it was when we did the salary survey 2 years ago.
I see. So 2 years ago we were behind.
Yeah. Flo, when are we going to do the next salary survey?
Okay.
When did we do the last one? When did we do the last one? It was done last January?
Huh?
It was done last January?
It was done, last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And usually they ask for any negotiations.
I had two questions.
And that was for this negotiation?
3 years, basically.
Yeah, okay. So the ones we just did is for this round of negotiations.
Okay, I'm really just trying to make sure that I understand why we're doing this and how we end up stacking, because, you know, obviously we want to be a premier place to work, if we can afford to do that. I mean, we don't want to be below comparable organizations.
And we have been, I mean, I would tell you that some of our classifications within the UNREPs have been and could use some equity adjustments. Mm-hmm. But I think that given the last recession and what's going on with the salaries, yeah. I don't know that that's still true. And I think if we factored the takeaways into the last salary survey, which isn't a hard thing to do if we wanted to engage the person again to say how many furlough days, what with the COLA, no increases. But we have offered, we have had no takeaways in this agency. And unlike BART, I will go to BART because they're totally not in our business, and I won't point fingers to anyone that in the neighborhood. They had a tremendous amount of takeaways for a period of years that the union is really aggressively trying to get back at this point. We have nothing we're trying to get back. We have really been consistent with giving increases throughout this. We haven't had any takeaways. So it isn't like they're starting the negotiations in the hole. Because of that, this classification, I think, is probably going to be better off than they were even when we did the last survey a year ago. We could probably look at it again.
Yeah, I see.
Of those salaries may not be as comfortable with the benefits, when you factor in our benefits, because of our benefit package.
Yeah, and in the area, in the last salary survey, there were basically two agencies that had more salary and benefits than we did, and that was the San Francisco Housing Authority and the Richmond Housing Authority.
Fascinating.
Yeah. We're a better place to work.
Okay, so we have Commissioner Pitts and Commissioner Hurd.
Thank you.
So my question is just about the fiscal environment that we're in right now, mm-hmm. not knowing what's going to happen next. It seems like, why are we making this move instead of waiting till the dice shake out after the next possible round of events? It seems like we're mm-hmm. jumping the gun on something we don't necessarily need to do.
Well, my thinking is that because I ran these numbers backward and forward, and so what we tried to do was be fair to the employees, because as Eric mentioned, some of our employees are below what's happening in the region for similar classifications. I felt like 1%, based on my crunching the numbers and sort of looking at the environment, is sustainable, because you don't want to give too much and then end up having to take back. So I think the 1% is reasonable, and it is sustainable. I look at things in 5 and 10 years when I'm doing my analysis on the numbers to make sure that it doesn't put us in a position that 5 years from now we'll have to come back to our employees and take it away. So very important to me to that sustainability piece. There are some uncertainties, but Oakland Housing Authority has been historically conservative on its finances, and it continues to be that way. Using last year's budget as an example, we had projected that we would have a significant deficit, but because there was a lot of belt tightening internally, we were able to not have that be the case. So I think that we're on that same type of a path this year, so we are being very prudent with our resources and maximizing every dollar. And so to me, a 1% give to our employees is fair, and it doesn't place the agency at risk in the future for having to take it back.
And one thing that Janet didn't mention that I really am concerned about is we've, in the past 4 months, had two of our analysts quit to go to better paying jobs in neighboring cities, not housing authorities. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a period of time where where our staffing was much more geared toward inner housing authority moves, where if you were looking at some of these positions. But really with some of them, particularly the policy analysts, senior policy mm-hmm. analysts, senior management analyst positions, we're competing with other cities more than we are with other housing authorities. And we've lost talent. And I think once you start seeing the talent leave, and you could think of one person who used to do our MTW plan that left for that reason, that's a good reason to make sure you don't wait, because you don't want to lose more people because they think they're not going to get any, there's not a progression, and they can already make more across the street.
Okay. Oh yeah, so Janet, it says that in across the board 1% cost of living adjustment effective January 1, 2014.
Mm-hmm. Right.
2014.
Yes.
Okay. And there was no retro involved with this?
No.
No, okay.
Did someone up? Oh.
Commissioner Pitts.
Yes, Commissioner Castillo.
I think you halfway answered my question, Janet. I was just curious about an adjustment needed to the 2014 budget. Did we have to sacrifice in any other parts in order to make this happen? So it sounds like you really crunched the numbers, but I just want to ask the question.
No, we won't. I actually pulled the first three months of the year, and we are still seeing significant savings. So it would not hurt us in order to implement this.
I'm ready to move on it.
Okay, we have a motion.
I'll second.
And we have a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed?
Nay.
Nay. One opposed. Any abstentions? Okay. One opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Are there any modifications to the agenda? Okay. Hearing none. Let me note that Commissioner Main has arrived and is now present.
So noted.
Moving on to item six, new business.
New business.
Item A, new business.
Item A is consideration of a resolution authorizing and approving the issuance and delivery of up to $19,879,000 in 2013 state ceiling qualified private activity bonds, authorizing the lending of the proceeds of the bonds to the Ave Vista Associates LP for 460 Grand Avenue, and authorizing the execution and delivery of a master pledge and assignment, master agency agreement, regulatory agreement, and such other documents as may be necessary for the issuance of bonds. This is an action you've done before, and I'm seeing Phil Neville here to give us a brief report on the hopefully start of construction in December and closing for 460 Grand. Phil.
Thank you. Commissioners, again, I'm Phil Neville, and with three items in front of you, this is the first of three items that have to do with this project, the 460 Grand project. You often hear it referred to as Ave Vista now, it's through your documents. I want to point out that in the audience tonight, we have legal counsel Michelle Brewer here. We also have two representatives of Bridge Housing. Joe McCarthy, who you've seen many times, and Tom Early is with him tonight. And sitting next to Michelle is Bridget Galka, of course, our project manager. All those folks are available to you should you have any questions tonight. This first item in front of you has to do with the bond financing and related construction loan documents. This particular resolution is harder to read than the normal resolution we bring you because it is specifically drafted by our bond counsel, and he wants to cover certain things in a very legalistic way. But essentially, the Housing Authority can issue tax-exempt bonds, in which we plan to do in this case. Those would be privately placed to a lending team headed by J.P. Morgan Chase. Also included on the lending team are Wells Fargo Bank and Silicon Valley Bank. You'll also hear about Wells Fargo as the evening goes on, as they are, in fact, the equity investor in the project as well. So reminding you, this is a site over on West Grand, right across the street from Lake Merritt. It's a beautiful site. It was entitled already when we bought it for condominiums. Again, we propose to build 68 units of affordable family housing, and about 4,000 feet of retail will be on the ground floor, parking underneath. So this is a very good project and a very good neighborhood. Bridges worked very hard in looking under all the stones to find any financing they could. The Housing Authority's role in this project is we are the landowner. We bought the land back in 2011. We are the gap financier, and we also provided project-based vouchers to the development. In spite of the fact that it's been in front of you a few times, I want to just highlight a few things. by you've already passed what's called a bond inducement resolution. This further authorizes us to issue the bonds. Bridge applied for bond authority from CIDLAC, the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee, and got approval. Then it applied to TCAC, the Tax Credit Allocation Committee, for 4% tax credits. In combination, we were able to piece together enough money to move the project forward. We hope to close this project the first few days of December and get under construction. Are there any questions so far?
The only thing I would add is that the bonds carry no obligation for OHA. In fact, it's the important line to look for. The bonds contain an express disclaimer that there's no recourse against authority of, yes, or any of its commissioners, officers or employees for any repayment. So we really mitigate our risk in issuing. We're really the issuing agency for the bonds, and the partnership has the liability.
Commissioner Main has a question.
In light of some of the issues that J.P. Morgan Chase is having, are we going to have any delay or problems in this project because of their dilemma?
Yes, they have been in the news again lately. They're still one of the largest financial institutions in the world, and I think the first or second largest in America. In this case, the funding actually comes from the bonds. So in effect, by privately placing the bonds that we issue through the bank, we're not asking them to fund anything with their own money. They simply take the bond proceeds and they become the construction lender on the project. Then at the end of the construction, there'll be a smaller amount in a permanent loan. There's a conventional first mortgage and a small Section 8 tier mortgage that they will be making. But I see no risk, and if you want any of the people that may know more about that to come up, I'll bring them up.
That didn't really answer my question.
It didn't. Because I don't know that we can answer, because we don't know. We just assume they're going to be fine.
Okay. Yeah. That's the right answer, I guess. It's, you know, it could be possible that they get locked up. We're hoping that never happens, okay? But if that indeed happened, would we be held up, or could we move what we're doing to another institution to continue what we're doing? That's more the question.
Things like that have happened at the last minute. Let me just say that Chase is also the lender over at Cathedral, and we're now well over 50% completed. We've had no problems with the Chase team. They have the lender we work with at Chase actually is a former member of the Bridge Housing Corporation staff many years ago, who I knew then, and we've continued to work with him. And they've been very good to work with. In this case, Bridge went all over the country looking for the best lenders that would provide the best debt package and the best investors that would provide the best equity package. And the deal we got with Chase Bank was the best. So we think there's good reasons for us to go with them, and we don't see any risk that we won't close in early December.
I guess my better question would be, do we have contingency plans in the effect that something should happen? The government's been so crazy lately, and things have turned around that have never happened before. I'm just wondering how we do our business as to our projects that we're already going to be funding ourselves.
Well, as of today, October 28th, we have no specific contingency plan because we have a commitment signed with Chase Bank that they will fund this. So we didn't see the need to have that. I have heard of a project that lost money in the last 2 months and had to scurry around and find someone else. There were several other lending teams that wanted to make this deal with us that Bridge left at the altar, so to speak. So if something happened, we might be able to approach one of them.
Fortunately, I haven't heard of J.P. Morgan having a problem like that. I have heard of other institutions with other contractors and developers who have called the loan due, even when it wasn't due, because they were having a financial problem themselves. And it caused a real problem. If they couldn't find their own investor afterwards, then they were stuck with having their properties foreclosed on. And they were really upset with the situation. Fortunately, they had a contingency plan that helped them through it. And I just wanted to make sure that maybe we should start looking at contingency plans so that we don't fall into that predicament. But, you know, J.P. Morgan, I think, is one of the largest that shouldn't have that issue. And if it does, we got bigger problems. That's my question.
Any more questions?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Commissioner Hurt.
Okay, Phil, and this is a learning question. I just want to be clear. I'm on page 4, and it says, and look at the very top. It says the bonds are payable solely from the sources and collateral pledge. What does that mean? Collateral pledge.
Okay. Again, tying into what Eric said about how there's no liability to us, these are identified broadly as project revenue bonds, as opposed to general obligations of the Oakland Housing Authority. So the loans are being made to a partnership set up by Bridge. Bridge, in fact, has an entity that will be the general partner in that. And Bridge has to pay it back only from sources to the project. So during the construction period, when we might have $17 or $18 million out there spent, there's other sources that Bridge has arranged that will come in and pay that money off. So when they say here the words, sources and collateral pledged and identified for the repayment of bonds under this indenture, these are those sources. And when we get into the third item tonight, there's a spreadsheet attached which does show sources and uses. Okay. And it'll show how what the sources are after the construction period when we pay down the loans that were made. So that's what speaking to.
All right. Thank you, Phil.
Commissioner Castillo.
This is a question about the project itself. You mentioned that there's going to be retail space down below. Have we also perhaps had a conversation about inviting organizations or service providers that could serve the residents as well as the community around there? Because there's not that many service providers over in that 460 Grand Avenue area.
Yes, absolutely. There are plans afoot to provide services in the building. That would be separate from the 4,000 square feet of retail space. There are management offices, community room, and space to provide services being built in. I don't think the services have already been contracted, but if you'd like to hear more about services, maybe someone could come up and tell you more about that. Or was it about the space? What was your question?
It's pertaining to the retail space, kind of like a mixed use. And I understand that there's going to be services to the residents, mm-hmm. Which does not truly benefit the area, you know, more like to connect, like create a space where it actually could benefit the area and the folks.
Neighborhood serving services?
Yes.
As opposed to neighborhood
inside
serving
retail? Inside of the retail,
retail
space, yeah. No. Yeah. A little bit of everything. Yeah.
It's an interesting idea because what you're pointing out is that the building's not big enough to sustain real services on site. And if we can't get more services for the surrounding community, it's really not going to have that much on site. And that's a really good observation because I think you're right. And I'm not sure what kind of service they're going to have on site, but the real issue is also to remember that the Section 8 families will have access to our programs when they come in for the annual reviews as well, beyond whatever they're offering at the site. but it is, you're right. It's a challenge. With the building this size, you don't have enough population really to do a lot.
And that's why I was mentioning retail space that we've dedicated for retail.
And what is the programming? Do we know on the retail space? You know?
Could we have Joe come up?
Yeah. Introduce yourself, if you would, for the record.
Hi, my name is Joe McCarthy. I'm the Senior Project Manager with Bridge. Good to see you all again. As far as the retail space, you know, we have a couple of different options. It's a wonderful space there at Bellevue and Grand. It's about 3,000 square feet. We're assuming it'll be a tenant or two. It could be anything from a restaurant. We're having services and connections there potentially for a restaurant. But it also could be office space as well. So we've gone out to talk to several real estate brokers and space brokers, and we're still a little bit early as far as getting someone in there. But services for the community can certainly be, it's certainly on that list, and would be a wonderful location, I think. Across from the park, there's a lot of dynamics that you can do within the community there. It's also a double height space, wonderful space. So I would say that's certainly on our list of possibilities. The services for the buildings are separate, have separate contracts. But there's no reason that there could potentially be something that's in that space that could benefit the tenants, which we hope so. So,
one such example would be a People's Grocery Store, like, you know, the speaking West of people's Oakland corridor. You know,
Bridge, you know, is the one who developed with us Mandela, which is where they are.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking.
And what I would say about the space, unlike Mandela, where it was a real challenge to get any, and we still have one vacant space that needs tenant improvements that we're looking at. How to get the money, but it's been a challenge there because of its location across the street, and it's not really, you don't have to walk through it when you leave BART. It's all the things that Fruit Bell Station, if you go to them, if you do their tour with the right people, they'll tell you the truth of what went wrong. But in our case, it's just walking across the street, so we lost really the foot traffic to and from the parking lot because we're not on the way. Bridge has really been out there trying with John Stewart to get those leased up and to make them viable commercial. This commercial space, unlike that, though, is really lucrative commercial space. I think the lease up in Grand, I don't think there's a vacant storefront along Grand from you know, the one end of the park to the other, which is, this is really sitting in some choice real retail neighborhood. So I think they should be able to get something going on right away. Whether they make room for services in that, we'll see. But at least I think we won't have vacant storefront for any length of time there.
Thank you.
Commissioner Montgomery.
I was reading in August of 2013, you submitted an application for transit-oriented development funds for $2.4 million. Is that a part of the package that...
Ms. Montgomery, we don't know yet if that is going to be funded.
Okay.
We should be finding out very soon. That's the last competition from what we called Proposition 1C, and they had they were accepting applications from some money they had recycled for the transit-oriented developments and infill infrastructure programs. And we believe we'll be finding out in November, before too long, who got those awards, and we're keeping our fingers crossed.
Okay. I see where it's going to be, hopefully in mid-November.
Yes.
Okay.
Any more questions? Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Moved?
A second.
Seconded. All those in favor, please
aye.
Say
aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All those opposed?
Aye.
Any abstentions? Do we have an opposition? No. Okay. Carries unanimously. Item B.
Thank you, Commissioners. Item B, consideration of a resolution authorizing the creation of an OHA Development LLC that would serve as an OHA Special Limited Partner Entity in the Ave Vista 460 Grand Partnership and in other future developments. This is creating a structure of an LLC that is a little different for us, and I want to thank Michelle Brewer for coming up with this solution for with our real estate. We have, as you know, a lot of different LLCs, including Tasparangas and So what she's doing is proposing something broader where we could add future projects to this one rather than go through the burden and even roll some into it. And I think it's a great approach, and and fully support it. Phil's here for any questions. It would be just establishing a LLP that was just for one property, but this one is able to expand and absorb.
Okay.
And Phil and Michelle are here for any questions.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Carried unanimously.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Moving on, item C.
Item C is consideration of a resolution to authorize the execution of documents and actions related to financing the development and construction of Ave Vista Apartments, known as 460 Grand Project. This is our standard authorization to redo everything on closing and give both the chair and myself the authority to sign the closing documents when we get there for the construction.
So moved. Do you have a question?
I have lots of spreadsheet questions, but other than that.
Commissioner Pitts has spreadsheet questions.
We're available to answer.
So, first off, I think it's our first time really seeing this one. Correct me if I'm wrong. So it's awesome. Great breakdown. Lots of good stuff on here, but I was hoping somebody could explain a little bit all of it. And I had confusion about the total development costs under the first line item, if everybody has the spreadsheet, versus the total uses at the bottom. It's like a $40,000 difference. So I was wondering where that was.
Commissioner, did you want to go right into some questions, or did you want a little overview first?
Sure, it'd be great to have an overview of all the categories. Somebody, Bridget wants to do.
So let's see if we can get that overview for you.
Perfect.
So we'll tag team. Hi, my name is Bridget Galka. I'm the Assistant Director of Office of Real Estate Development. Nice to see you all. So this is a typical kind of summary pro forma for a 4% tax credit and bond deal. You actually picked up on a really good catch. You should get into this business. That there is a discrepancy between the total amount for the budget summary in A and the use of funds in the bottom. They should match.
Okay.
Good catch. So why don't they match?
Yeah, I want to go. Hi, Joe McCarthy here again. I'm just going through and looking through each of these items. It may have been one of the problems into the cells, but it should be a 31,319,000. That should be the match there. So I'd have to get back into and look at that difference. But the 31,319,000 is the total, and that's what that should total there.
So that's a total.
For uses. And for sources?
So that should be your permanent period there for your total sources and total uses there.
Mm-hmm. So you've got this
31,319.
31,324 and 33.
Okay.
So this is the one.
That's still $3,000 difference.
So the 31,324,000, I'm sorry. And the 31,364,000. So the 31,324 is the total uses,
mm-hmm.
and those should match. I'd have to go back and look at those cells. This was done on. I'd sent this out. We had the BART strike, so I had to come over and do this in your office.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a bit of a rush. So I do apologize. Mm-hmm. But the 31,324 is the total uses.
Okay.
So I can correct that and get that to you if you need it. I'd have to look back at the cells.
So.
Do you want to go? Would you like me to go through the A, B's, and C's?
Sure.
Okay. So the development budget summary includes all of the project costs, including acquisition. And so we break it down by the total and then the per residential unit, per residential square foot, and then per residential gross square foot. The sources are... In the B section, so the sources and uses are the permanent mortgage that we're getting from JP Morgan Chase, and there's two tranches. One is being supported by the tax credit rents, and that's a smaller $2.4 million, and then one is being supported by the project-based based Section 8 vouchers. So we also have a construction loan and the investor equity, which only you'll see only some of it is coming in during the construction period, and then the rest comes in during the permanent period. So that's a source to pay down the construction loan, primarily. GP equity is a little bit tricky. We are contributing equity, and basically this helps us get more tax credits. It's a little bit complicated.
Right, well, I have one question right before we move on from B. Mm-hmm. I was wondering what the difference is in the gap funding, why we go up $1 million when we get into the permanent period. Did we decide to do all 8 million, 8.3 at once, or did we jump up?
It's another very good question. So when you use bonds, mm-hmm. 50% of the bonds of the construction costs have to be paid with the bonds. So sometimes when we have a large soft loan, we can't put all of it in during construction because then 50% of the costs are not being paid with the bonds.
Okay.
So it's just to make sure that
we save $1 million for the next.
Exactly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So then at the bottom we've got the uses of funds, and you'll see that most of it is for construction, and the indirect expenses are like the architect and the various reports. We've got the bank costs and the interest cost, and then we've got our reserves and our organizational expenses. So those are kind of the broad expenses. And then we've got over at C, the financing assumptions. You'll see the various interest rates and terms. So we've got, again, the first tranche of the permanent mortgage, the second Section 8, and the construction loan, the equity. We have both federal and state credits, and you'll see we have different payment standards for each. And then we've got the OHA acquisition cost as number 5. And then over in the right corner, we've got the 5-year cash flow, which just kind of shows us basically being able to pay down the permanent loan. That's the big thing that you have to be able to show you can pay down your permanent loan. So that's what that little scenario is showing. And we've got the rents at the bottom.
So a question on the rents. What's the level of subsidy with the project-based Section 8? How deep does that go? Because I noticed most of our, we're at 50% or above. Does project-based Section 8 get us down to the 30%?
Yeah.
AMI level for folks?
Yeah.
Okay. And in terms of our cost per square foot or cost per unit, how does that compare to other developments we've done?
It's a good question, and I don't have the spreadsheet that
this one would be among the highest, if not the highest. And I did the math today because I was talking to Cynthia Parker about something while we were on the phone. But it's also in a really expensive neighborhood. It's also at a time when the construction costs and development costs have gone up. But it's, by my math, is an upwards above $400,000 per unit. And I don't know the exact calculation when you factor it all in, which is really, really expensive. And I don't know that we've done one higher. But I didn't go back and check the spreadsheet that you had from last year. So I think it is one of our most expensive per unit, if not our most expensive per unit development.
One of the problems with this development is that it was fully entitled when we received the project. And because it was a condo project, there was a certain amount of parking spaces that were required as a condo project. So we were able to get a little bit less parking because we lowered the amount of units from the original approval, but there's 97 parking spaces, which is one level of underground parking, and that's costly.
But the justification for me just gets back to some of the conversations you've had in the retreat and otherwise about neighborhoods of choice. I don't think there's a better neighborhood we have a development project in. And the investment now, in 10 years, they will have forgotten that it costs so much per unit, and we know we'll have affordable housing in this neighborhood permanently, and at least a guarantee for as long as Section 8 is there. And I think that's valuable. I think we're going to really try and do the kind of two-pronged approach of lifting some neighborhoods up and then making building opportunity into some neighborhoods where there's not for affordable housing. This one is that second one, and it just costs more.
Okay. And so the 34 units that are project-based Section 8, they're going to give us enough of a range of income that we're serving, so it's not just in the 50 to 60% AMI level.
Yeah, that'll be the very low, extremely low income, and then we'll have the very low above that. So there'll be ranges, okay, which I think will make for healthy property as well, by the way.
Right. Okay. Thank you for answering my spreadsheet questions.
Commissioner Castillo.
So we have 68 units and 97 parking spaces. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Are we going to have run a garage for workers or something? Make some money?
I would just add on the parking, it's one of the most stringent requirements for the city of Oakland. The parking, the Adams Point neighborhood is incredibly impacted by parking. Neighbors are very outspoken about the parking issue. And so when this was approved, I think it's the S12 parking zone, it's the most stringent parking zone in the city. And so it's certainly, it's driving a two-level parking garage, which, like I said, reducing the units has reduced the size of that a bit to 97 stalls, but we still have 97 stalls. So it will, we certainly, when the community reaches out to us, that's certainly one of the things they're relieved by, in that we're not impacting, I mean, the neighborhood won't have additional impacts due to parking, so.
Okay, that's 30 spaces different. So it was by law we had to have that many? Is that what you're saying?
By zoning, yes.
It was by zoning. It was a bit, but it does open up a business opportunity, so I will look into that.
We can have one of the residents, you know.
I'll move the item.
Oh, let me just ask one. I just have one more question, because Commissioner Pitts, you know, opened up the spreadsheet box. So I just naturally had to ask one question. What is the occupancy rate that is driving your revenue numbers?
95%.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So item's been moved.
I moved it.
She seconded. Oh, and seconded. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Thank you, commissioners. All right, next item. Item D, nomination election of a director to the Tassafaronga Housing Corporation Board of Directors to fill a vacated seat left by former Commissioner Adi Nagraj. As you know, Commissioner Nagraj has moved on to the Planning Commission and resigned, and we have a vacancy to fill for Tassafaronga Housing Corp. And that is appointment of this board. So we would request an election of officer for the replacement term.
Yes. So let me, Commissioner Montgomery, would you be interested in being on this board? Because this is an opportunity to really get in firsthand contact with a very significant OHA property.
How often does this board meet?
Infrequently. It is chaired by Vice Chair Hurd, and we had a meeting today, so we wouldn't have one for a while. It is, you know, Tassafaronga, it's our development. It is operating as smoothly as any development that I've ever seen.
Yes, it is.
On every level, from public safety through to cash flowing.
Yes.
And so it's a really pleasure to be able to, you know, have that in our portfolio, and this board meets. How often do we meet, Bridget?
I thought we were meeting once a quarter, unless there was a need to meet more frequently. I think it's once every 3 months.
And you can also call into the meetings.
Okay. And they're short meetings.
Okay, if it's okay with the rest of the commissioners, I'll accept.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Commissioner Montgomery.
Excellent. Okay. Can we just do a motion for the record?
Oh, we need to. Do we have to vote on this?
Yes. Someone needs
okay.
to make a motion.
Okay. So we have a motion.
I'll nominate her.
We have a motion.
Second.
We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Unanimous.
Okay. Thank you, commissioners.
Okay. Very good. So now we are moving on to item E.
Item E is consideration of a recommendation of the Board of Commissioners for the appointment of 20 members to the Oakland Housing Authority Resident Advisory Board. As you know, we make annual appointments to the Resident Advisory Board, and this is our annual appointment list. It has some new folks with probably some familiar names to some of us, and then some attorneys.
I'll move to accept it.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Great, thank you.
I'd like
Commissioner Main has a question or a comment.
I'd like to have a comment. Hopefully we'll be looking for more people on this board that are under the age of 50.
Really?
I'm sorry, excuse me. I'm Robin Johnson. My name's on the list.
That's correct. We can't respond.
You were going to respond to my comment? Were you going to say
Yeah, just I aside from the 50 threshold, we are actually having some younger people join this time, and that's what. And I think that one of the things that the RAB has discussed at many meetings is doing exactly that, and how to do the outreach and going about, and we have some progress.
Yes, I see that.
You need to fill out a speaker slip.
Yes.
I did fill out a speaker slip.
I just wanted more.
That's okay.
What I was
do you
saying.
Have? Would you fill one out, and then we can
I
the comment?
I did. This one went by so quickly that I didn't have a chance to look at that
list.
Wait,
I do not have a speaker card.
No.
You haven't filled out a slip.
Not my chance. What are you talking about? Not my chance.
Oh, here's one.
Hold oh, no, on. I'm not talking
hold
about
on,
speaking.
Hold on, hold on.
No, okay, we have
I'm not talking about speaking. I'm talking about your list of the RAB members. My name's not on there.
Is it?
That's what my issue is.
You need to fill out a speaker card.
Now,
I filled out a speaker card, but this just came up. The issue
wait,
of
this item is not yet up on the agenda.
She can still speak.
So,
I'll answer the question.
All right.
You need to recognize okay, you can allow her to speak, but she wants to in the future.
Okay.
So,
very good.
Okay.
3 minutes.
So, Robin, you wish to speak on this item. I now have a speaker card from you, so you may go ahead and you have 3 minutes.
Good.
All right, on just this one, right?
You can do another speaker card if you want to speak.
I know, I'll be back for that one. This one is, I don't know, your list, I haven't heard from you guys in a while, not surprising, but this list, I'm looking at it, I don't see my name. That would concern me because I hadn't left the board. Now, if you're telling me these are just new people you're adding on, I don't have an issue. Okay. What is it?
No, you're not on the board. You haven't attended a meeting for over a year. The RAB elected not
that's
to
not
move
true.
People forward.
That's not true.
That is true, according to our records.
And that's the reason? Did we change our articles?
No,
we didn't change our articles. Did we change, forgive me, did the RAB change its, its articles? Of how we're organized. Did that happen sometime this year that I don't know about? Help me out here. Janie?
I think that there was some talk about articles. I'm not sure.
All right.
RAB falls under the CFR. It's appointed under the CFR and regulated. There's no bylaws that exist. It's not a 501c3, so I don't know if you're looking for that, but what it is the RAB is appointed by the Board of Commissioners. Your name was not moved forward because you hadn't attended in the past year. There were several other people who hadn't been attending as well that were not included.
All right. Well, then I definitely have an objection to be kicked off the RAB board. And I don't know how you're going to fix it because I have been there in the past year. I made sure a whole year hadn't went by. I have. I'm sorry. And unless you changed our articles are, you don't get kicked off if you haven't been there for a year.
Did your name was not moved forward for nomination?
Yeah. I mean, if that's the case, now we can be kicked off the board by you? By your choice?
I did not make these recommendations, no.
Okay.
I'm now recommending the staff's recommendations of the board, and the reason you were not put on the list is because you had not intended for over a year. Anyone who has not attended for over a year, and it wasn't just you, were not moved forward to continue with the board to make room for people who do.
Make room. Okay, and what's to make room? Because you've increased the number, decreased the number of members? We're not proportional to our numbers in the program anyhow, but still. So in order to give somebody a space on the board, you had to kick me off? And if you want to go there, now I was a board member up until now then, right? Because this is a new board you're putting together. Am I misunderstanding something?
No, the RAB board gets appointed annually by the Board of Commissioners.
So I was a member all year until now.
You were on the board, yes. You didn't attend any meetings.
Like I said, my year was coming up, and I was making sure I was going to make it in there. You're going to cut me off? No, you're not going to cut me off. It's because for some reason there was talk out there, and I didn't take it seriously, but I was supposed to be being kicked out of the program altogether, not just the RAB board, but out of the program. And that's why I haven't received any of my RAB literature for the past year. I didn't take offense to it because I've been busy. But now being kicked off without notice, yeah, I have an issue.
I think Commissioner Main has a question.
Yeah. If you're not on the RAB board, are you still allowed to attend? Okay. You advise it to me. You just don't have a vote. Isn't that correct?
And most of our new members have been attending regularly for the past mm-hmm. year plus.
Okay.
So that just annihilates my past 5 years on the board? This year, I had some inconveniences to where the board, you all didn't contact me. I was told that, you know, I was being kicked out. Trying to preserve that, I had every intention of returning to the board. And we're only in October, and I know I was there at the end of the year last year, so.
I think Commissioner Pitts has a question.
Okay.
Well, I think nobody here is saying that you're annihilated from the board. Well, what Moses is trying, or Commissioner May is trying to bring forward, is that you can attend meetings, you can show up, and you can be there and show that you're dedicated to doing it, and then we'll reappoint you to the board again.
But that's just it. I'm a member of our board, and our articles, we went over it when we were making them, and we discussed this issue of being on the board and not being on the board. And how it was over that if somebody hadn't shown up for over a year, were we going to go ahead and dismiss them? And we had decided as a board we weren't. If they were supposed to be contacted to find out if they were still. If they couldn't be contacted, a lot of people have been. And it came up. I was early on the board when the issue came up that it had been going on for years, and they never terminated a membership. After they talk.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Let me just interject here because this item is not on the agenda, so we can't really debate it or make a decision on it tonight. But policy. Mm-hmm. The policy is not on the agenda. And this is really moving into a policy issue. So I am wondering, Eric, if you would be able to have someone talk with her and sort this out, because I mean it's clearly not going to happen tonight at the board meeting, but I think we really need to know.
Mm-hmm. I would be happy to schedule a meeting about it with Ms. Johnson.
Oh, I'm scared of that. I'm trying to understand. We're not going to talk about it now because it can't be resolved. I don't see. If this is the time when you guys are making this resolution to pass the standing board members of the board now.
In answer to that, I could also report back to the board what the current procedure policy for selecting the board is in a report.
Yes, that would be appreciated because there does seem to possibly be a little bit. I mean, there's obviously a disagreement here. There's mm-hmm. a difference mm-hmm. in point of view.
Is it a policy that a person who is on the RAB in the past maintain a position in the future, or is
if they're in good standing with the Housing Authority and if they attend meetings, yes. The only people who were removed from the RAV were people who were either not in good standing any longer, which I think there wasn't any, but it was people who did not attend for over a year. They were removed, and they were removed, and I think the RAV supported that action.
So is there also, there's a possibility on our behalf to increase or decrease the number of people?
We don't have a fixed number for the RAB, and we are actually always looking to have a decent-sized body, but we want people who will participate and show up for meetings and work on behalf of the RAB. We have every other month they have a meeting, and every other month in between they have working sessions, and they have a lot of working groups, and they're actually moving ahead with issues, and we need people who will participate. So what the people who are removed from the recommendation this year were people who become basically inactive at the RAB. They're not really attending, and they haven't attended for over a year.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So we've already moved this item.
Yes.
Right.
I'm take it back.
Commissioner Montgomery had a comment or question.
I was just saying that maybe we could revisit this at one of our RAB meetings at the beginning of the year.
That's a great idea.
We could go on the agenda because
defer it to the RAB.
Yeah, and refer it back, and we can revisit whatever our policy or whatever, and then we can bring it back to the board in maybe
later next year.
Next year.
Okay.
My standing with the housing, I'm in good standing, am I not?
As far as I know, you are. No one, I think, was removed for that, but those are requirements.
Okay, requirements is to be in good standing. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason we didn't put a time limit on if you had to be absent for the board is because things happen. Things happen in our lives, and we're not always able there to make it. And that's what we discussed as a board. Now, being standing here with you guys, it's like the RAB board, we really don't have any kind of influence if our power can just be pulled away by you just because you didn't see me, you didn't talk to me, you didn't even check in with me to know if I wanted to be on the board, if I was even interested in the board anymore.
Okay, wait, I think we have two suggestions on the table to try to address this. One is to go to the RAB board, and the second is that Eric is either going to talk to you or he's going to have someone else talk to you to try to sort this out, because this is now turning into a policy debate that we are not equipped to have. But that said, I want to thank you for bringing this to our attention because now we're aware of it, and something is being done to clarify this and figure out what happened.
Okay, I don't like being special anymore. I don't want to be special. I want my membership to stand. I haven't been gone for a year. He has no other reason. He said it's because I've been gone for a year. I attended the Christmas party. I was there. It's October. I was at the October meeting.
Well, as I say, this has to be sorted out. I mean, according to the records of OHA, they're saying you weren't there for a year. Maybe they're wrong. I have no way of knowing. But speakers have 3 minutes. I think we've gone well.
I'm being victimized. No, I'm the one victimized because if I let this go now, I'm not a member anymore.
No, we're not. You're not going to be victimized here. We are dealing with it.
Then do I remain a member?
We are dealing with this.
Then let's deal with it.
We don't know. We don't know what your membership status is now because we can't make that decision. That's not something the board can do right now.
If the issue was I hadn't been there for a year and I just told you I was there at the Christmas party. There's members here?
We need to
the Christmas
on.
Party, the last.
Okay, yes.
They took pictures of
We need to move on. We need to move on. Speaker's time is up.
Can I say that?
Uh-huh. Yes, Commissioner Main.
You know, if you keep talking and disregarding what we're trying to tell you, I'm not going to be in the position to think I want to vote her on if they come up with that, okay?
Okay.
Okay, give us some respect. We're trying to help you, okay? We're saying we can't deal with this right now. You're telling us we have to. We're telling you we can't deal with this. You keep telling us we have to. Okay, we're not going to deal with this right now. We're referring you to the right methodology so you can get it resolved. So give us the respect, do what we ask, and let us move on.
Bend over.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm asking.
Yeah, because my respect has just been walked out the door. I didn't miss the yearly thing. There's no justification for taking me off the board. And you're
Look, speaker's time is up. The debate is over. We're not qualified to have this debate. We have a plan in place. We are going to address this problem. We are going to address it. You are going to be listened to.
So the item's been moved and seconded.
Okay, the item's been moved and seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
Opposed.
Abstentions? Carries unanimously. Okay. So, moving on to item F.
Item F is our annual approval for selected national, regional, state conferences for calendar year 2014. I think we've included all the ones that are routinely included with the dates where they are known and the destinations. By moving this day, it allows us to make travel plans throughout the year and substantial savings in terms of the travel. And also, we have conferences that start right after the beginning of the calendar year. So we like to get this done in October so we can make some plans. And that concludes my report.
So move.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Great. Now we are now moving on to the consent agenda.
I would like to pull out item 2 for a couple of questions.
Okay, Commissioner Main is requested pulling item 2.
Move the rest of the items.
Second.
Move, seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Carries unanimously. Moving to item 2.
Item two is approval of a blanket purchase order with Trimble Navigation Limited for GPS installations and monitoring in an amount not to exceed $90,000 for fiscal year 2014. And we're here for any questions. This is to continue the servicing and installation of GPS in our fleet vehicles. Janet Rice, Chief Administrative Officer, is available for any questions.
I have 2 questions. I understand it. I know this is a little sensitive. Question number 1 is, how much has this investment saved us? And how has it been evaluated?
So because we are just rolling it out for a full years of service, we don't have an evaluation of the savings yet. This amount of money will cover all vehicles, and so that way we will be able to do an assessment of the savings.
So when will we be able to get an evaluation? In a year, 6 months?
You know, I think the discussion right now is probably the earliest would be 6 months, because we have half part of the vehicles were covered, so we could theoretically do an analysis on that portion. So we would need at least another 6 months to be able to tell you. We can report back.
Okay.
What is the goal of the GPS?
The goal of the GPS is, one, we can do tracking of our vehicles, and what you're talking about is how we deploy them and how we can move them. But it's also a safety measure for our staff. We know where they are. We know when they come home. We know, get back to the shop, but what I mean by home. We know when they get back to the service center and they check in. And at the end of the day, if people are not reporting or someone, we know we can look them up and find out where they're at. And it's a terrific safety enhancement for us to be able to map our fleet in that way. Additionally, it's going to hopefully help dispatch when they're moving people through the city, addressing work orders.
Now, I'm just curious, do you have any idea how the people driving these vehicles react to this?
Some people are opposed to it, and some people support it. And it just depends on whether or not they see it as a safety enhancement or Big Brother watching.
Yes, right, exactly. Those would be the two.
But the world has changed, and they're in all our new vehicles and have been, because they're installed in them automatically from the factory. And these are some retrofits for some of the older vehicles and some of our sedan cars that don't have them, so we can keep a record of those and know where the managers are when they do. Sometimes the managers will do site visits, and we think it's a safety precaution. We also want to watch our fleet. It mitigates our risk and exposure to car theft, and we think it's a good thing to have.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
I'll move the item.
Second.
Moved, seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Great, thank you, Commissioner.
And we're on to written communications.
Written communications.
Oh, sorry, we've recognition people wishing to address the commission. We've already done that. I have no more speaker cards, so we are indeed moving to written communications.
She put in a card for D, but she put in a
but we don't
card
have
for
another card
after the item. She's left the room.
We still have to announce
okay.
the fact that people have the opportunity to speak. If no one's here to speak, then they don't speak.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I thought I just did that.
So you
or
said
I didn't.
We don't have
Oh, I see. Okay, so let's be technically correct then. Do we have anyone wishing to address the commission?
Hearing none.
Hearing none. Thank you. Moving to written communications. Okay,
perfect. Written communications. Get to written communications. Looking
well,
at the chief's
dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
So we have the usual monthly report. We're available for any questions about that. I'm pleased about a lot of the developments, particularly least housing, but I just want to point out when we get to the questions. One of the things I started doing in the real estate at the back is, and it's hard to see in green, just the last line about how many employment, what we're reaching in our construction sites, and you can see that go up every month, which is great, and the percentages. I wanted to make sure everybody got the invitation to the grand opening event of our OHA Resident Leadership Center. It's Thursday, November 7th, and I'm looking forward to having it be a networking event for our resident leaders who've gone through NLI. So I've worked the invitations and the phones a little bit. We expect, you know, Councilmember McElhaney from that area is going to stop by, I believe. We also, a representative from Barbara Lee's office is going to stop by. And I just want to point out, this is, I'm not a big fan of big hoopla-has like grand openings, but when I can make it about something, and that means get people in the room who our residents can connect with and make it a network event, then I'll get behind it and do it. And that's really what this is an informal networking event. The resident leadership took the space in the first floor of Union, where you walk in into the right. It was kind of a garage space, but we converted to offices. What they did is finish it out, and really they made the choices, which I'm really pleased at what they've done with it. And it's a space that is a professional office space, and what I'm hoping is they can meet, and the resident leaders can meet their folks in a professional setting. They can do copying, computers, there's classroom setup, and there's also a meeting room in the back so they can host and try and get their initiatives off the ground. So I'm really excited about it. I want to thank Greer for helping out a lot with this and Lenita getting the event pulled together. And also the logo. As you notice, they have their own logo. When we were doing the logo, what I was really most pleased about as they came back, they said they really wanted OHA to be on the logo. So it's very similar to us. And the tree, if you look at, is really people, and the little dots are supposed to be heads for a group of folks joining hands that make the tree. So hopefully you can stop by. It's just an informal networking event. I think it's going to be a really good kickoff to what I hope is a really productive center for some folks, business center. We need also, if you want, we're looking for another appointment to the Ad Hoc Education Committee. It meets just a couple times a year, sometimes three times a year, basically what it's been meeting, but it actually tracks the progress with OUSD and another vacancy caused by the moving on of Adi Nagraj. So we have one space available if you'd like to join it. Currently it's chaired by Vice Chair Hurd, and Jenny Castillo sits on the committee as well.
Does anyone want to join this committee?
I think it needs a man on it.
Anyone want to volunteer?
Wait a second. God, wait. Recognition of people wanting to address the
commission.
I put in a speaker
volunteering.
Card.
Okay.
I want to volunteer.
Commissioner Main is volunteering. That item is now over.
All
right. We've moved on from that item. It was announced. We announced it over the intercom.
I have a question. In the written communications, I noticed that you have boob parties.
Have what?
Booby parties. I want to know if men are invited to it.
I don't know where that is.
What are these?
There's a typo. Page what?
Four.
Oh. It's a breast cancer awareness party.
Absolutely.
Got it. All right.
I mean, it is recognized that men do have breast cancer.
Yes.
So that's why I'm asking. Not that I want to attend, but...
I don't know.
You don't know.
I'm sure you could attend if you would like
No. I just want to know if men are invited.
I think they were probably.
Okay. Because I'm sure that we have men in the housing authority that might be at risk. Unfortunately, in this neighborhood, which is the Bay Area, it has the highest risk of prostate cancer and the highest risk of breast cancer than any place in the world. That's the Bay Area. So I think, you know, men should be at least attending to find out if they have doubts.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Not for visual effects.
A couple other things, I'll get to some highlights. I included a thank you card we received from one of our residents for the materials, because I know you don't get to see those often. I wanted to make sure you got to see it. Roadmap to Success is some of the work that's going on with family community partnerships and when they're having different workshops. I also included a report that I thought was valuable to see just on who participated in the summer youth employment since we awarded the 300 slots and where we were. And it was, I think, really beneficial in a host of ways, but not the least of which is how our residents were served throughout from border to border. And I thought that was very important. We got into all the neighborhoods in a really positive way and hopefully can do something next year as well. I also included the commissioner schedule, which goes all the way through to the end of 2014, so you know. So you can take a look at that. It's usual ones that are canceled because of holidays and rescheduled and to the same days we always do.
Do we need to vote on that schedule now so that we don't have to
do it later?
I don't
think we ever really vote on it. So the regular schedule is according to the bylaws. The only ones are the special meetings when we cancel.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The May and the November meeting.
We've never taken action to vote the schedule. It's not a requirement to vote it.
Okay.
what's going on. Alameda County is not currently involved. Yeah, that would be great.
Basically, what's happened is that a number of local jurisdictions, because of the cutback in funding, have implemented, they either call it pilot or some other fee that essentially takes the place of the property tax that they would have received if the property was not tax exempt. And all of our projects get property tax exemption because the managing general partner is either a nonprofit or a limited liability company with a nonprofit as its sole member. And what the State Board of Equalization that regulates the property taxes, property tax exemptions, has said, well, if you local government are charging a pilot fee or something like a pilot fee, then the project doesn't need a property tax exemption. So it's kind of interesting because there's a juxtaposition right now as between developers and cities, because Oakland has not imposed anything like that, but some cities have. As a matter of fact, Sacramento, where I'm working on a couple of projects, has implemented something like that. We were in one of those projects where it came up, we were successful in saying to Sacramento, the state BOE may not give this project a property tax exemption, so they withdrew that requirement. But that's the juxtaposition. The developers are saying, hey, we don't want to pay this because it's a higher cost to our projects, and the cities are saying, we need some money. Here's a way to get it. So that's what's basically going on. And the State Board of Equalization is having town hall meetings to make a decision as to how to handle this.
So this is a way of charging taxes without charging taxes.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I see.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right.
So I'm watching it. If there's any more risk, I'll definitely bring it to your attention.
And it affects nonprofits because it's the nonprofits that are the ones that have the property tax exemption. Right.
Couple other announcements. Holiday Splendor is going to be held Thursday, December 12th from 5 to 8 p.m. It'll be held at the Wedgwood Banquet Center at 151 Doolittle Drive in Oakland. So if you can join us, that would be lovely. If you just want to email me if you have a confirmation. But it's our annual event, and I can't remember what year it is, 30-something? 32, yeah. And it's moved to that location because it's grown. And we moved it to the Asian Center on 9th, and we outgrew that. Now we have moved it to this new place because we can accommodate some more folks. So it's really just becoming more popular. They've opened it up to different people, and the planning committee has chosen the venue and the food, and I'm pleased with all of their engagement. So it is. I made sure it was in Oakland because I didn't believe them. They had to prove it to me. But yes, it's in Oakland, so it's approved, and we're going to try it out there. Has free parking. Which is a big benefit. It's on one level, so we don't have to deal with elevators and things. So there are other benefits. Staff won't be able to serve food, which they're actually really upset about, but because they don't let them, because it's all employment. So we're finding other meaningful roles for them to play, unfortunately. But that's sometimes there's a bad side to growth. And
yeah,
that's one.
I want to recommend to all commissioners, attend this.
Which
it's just fun.
It's
I'm just telling you, it's just a really fun night.
Yeah. You can see Eric doing the shuffle.
The boot scoot and boogie.
Yes. And the slide.
And the electric slide, yeah.
Yeah.
And then another thing is, some of you know, OHAPD will be going through its fifth CALEA certification, and that's the Commission on Accreditation and Law Enforcement Agencies, December 1 through 4. And I think they may have a meeting with the chair that time they've set up, and I'll be there as well. There's going to be a public information session on Tuesday, December 3rd as well at 6 p.m., and it's going to be right here. There's going to be a mayor's job fair that's going to go into to Lockwood Gardens on Tuesday, November 19th from 1 to 3. They're hoping to have 10 employers at the event. Pretty happy that they've chosen Lockwood to host it, and so we're going to hopefully get some people some jobs. And then we have three committees that we're trying to schedule, and so we can do that now, or we can do it via email. But what I wanted to suggest on scheduling committees, if you guys are open for it, we can do one of the doodle polls where you can list times, because it gets very confusing for Inez and I when we're trying to figure out who said yes and no, and this way you go to this website and it'll have the dates and times, and you click which ones you want, and you can see what others have already done. So it makes it pretty easy at scheduling. And if you guys are open for doing that, that's how I'd like to go about scheduling them. It just makes life a lot simpler on our end. The three committees are the Ad Hoc Education Committee, which we have to set a new time for, the Ad Hoc Standards, Board Standards and Conduct Policy Committee, and the Ad Hoc Medical Marijuana Policy Committee are the three that we need to get meetings for. So I'll be getting those set up this week and some possible dates that you can click on. All right? And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Question, Commissioner
Castillo. Back to page four.
Okay.
I see that we have 10 parent ambassadors. Did we just roll over the same ones that we've had?
No.
No? Oh, there's
not
new ones.
Yeah.
Good.
I think we had, how many did we have last year? Six? Okay. Oh, there were 10 last year, and now we have 12.
That's fantastic. Are we working now with more schools, or we're just increasing our volunteers?
Ambassadors work at our pilot schools, but also other schools, right? So they don't, they're not limited to the six pilot. I think that we have one in Lockwood, for example. It's not.
They are limited to the partner schools, and they serve other sites.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's works
excellent.
That. So they start out the pilot and serve the other. Okay.
I look forward to knowing more about that at the Educational Ad Hoc Committee. The last one is pertaining to, and I'm not sure if anyone here has firsthand experience on the Revolution K-12 software that we are using to help our children. I have had experience in our Children's Learning Center at the shelter where the math is so difficult that our children are literally tearing up because of the new math that the district has rolled out. And so if this is good software, perhaps we could look into it. And I was wondering if anybody had any feedback on the Revolution software.
Good evening, my name's Lenita. The Revolution K-12 that we're using currently is for our high school students. We're supporting them with focusing with ACT and SAT prep. And we also have one of our adult residents who's using it. She's enrolled in college. So I do not have experience on the elementary and middle school level. We did purchase it specifically for our high school students and above. That's correct. The software, that's the name.
Okay.
Revolution K-12. That's the summer education and employment program that we do in collaboration with Youth Uprising. 70 young people are served in that program.
And this is our second year with that program.
Yes,
thank you so much.
You're so very welcome.
Can I ask a question regarding that too? Do we have a GED prep also?
We do not have one in-house, but we do have partnerships with three partners. I'm sorry, their names are escaping me at the moment, but we oftentimes and very frequently refer our residents and support with their tuition payments.
Page 17.
Is this
SCP related? Yeah, page 17. I was really glad to see the Samuel Merritt relationship there with the health clinics. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know, are we doing anything to register our residents with Covered California?
Oh, we are, to the extent that we even have it in our Voice newsletter and how to get registered. All we can do in our computer centers is actually give them access. There are other people who provide questions and help with that. So we don't really have that, and that's not our bit of work. What we've done is outreach, however, to all our residents about where you go, and then we have list on it where we have the computers centers that you can go get online to do your registration.
Okay, thank you.
I have a comment. Commissioner Main.
Page 10. Occupancy rates look great. I was wondering what happened to our Foothill property. It seems like that's our lowest one. And I'm wondering if there's an issue with why we have three that are vacant.
That I think is because of a lease enforcement action that happened for one family, and the other two may be vacates. It's traditionally, as you probably remember, has been a tough site. I'm not sure whether there are new vacancies and would have to check with Anna Kadanovskaya, but I don't believe she's here tonight.
Two of them are new,
yeah.
And one is
the lease enforcement. So they just got two voluntary vacates in 1 month. They have a wait list. They have people waiting you know, where some of the disconnects in the past that caused it to stay vacant shouldn't be the case at all.
Okay. Yeah. Concerned about that. I know there was some
water
damage and there was other problems that we had.
And I think that was the one of the vacates was a water intrusion issue in it that you remember a long time ago was still there, and they were corrected and we just had a settlement. The development itself is finally corrected, so it's actually now cash flowing a little bit. Good. And so it's had a turnaround in the past 2 years, which is good to see. And that was actually started before we did the additional Section 8 vouchers in place. You know, we started the turnaround, and that certainly helped it now to keep its lease up. And I don't anticipate those being vacant for more than next month.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, our rates look good.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll get us more money. Doubt it.
All right.
Okay, do we have any reports of commission committees? I don't think we had any meetings last month. No. Okay. Any announcements by commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Castillo.
I just wanted to let staff and the commissioners know of a new program coming out of Alameda County with Everyone Home called Home Stretch. And they are proposing to house 80 people a month. They're collaborating with about 60 landlords, from what I understand, that they promise to rent to disadvantaged folks who might have limited incomes and other barriers and challenges to securing permanent housing. And so I just, if you hear the word home stretch, I'm not sure how we can connect with them, but we are definitely signing people up every day. And if OHA can get involved in any way, I hope that you do.
Thank you. Anyone else? No? Yes.
Yeah, I have an announcement. I don't have the time, but the Army Base groundbreaking ceremony is scheduled for November 1st. That's the Army Base, the long-awaited, November 1st. Hmm. I had a time 11, but I heard today it was 1, so I'm sure you'll get more information. But the long-awaited Army Base project, the groundbreaking ceremony, is it?
One,
yeah. And I can send an email. I can forward an email I got on it if you want more information. I won't be there. I'll be out of town. But
okay. Yeah. But I'm excited. We're excited about that. Thank you.
Okay. Time to adjourn to closed session. So we will adjourn. Oh, we need a motion to adjourn. Okay, and so done.
So moved.
Closed session will take 5 minutes.
Great, thank you.
Closed session? Huh?